Good evening, my name is Keith and I'm an alcoholic.
Keith.
And my home group is the Wednesday Night Big Book Study Group. And I want to wish you guys all a happy new year. And I hope you guys had a happy holiday. It's very cool, you know, me being up here for the new year because, like before, 2 weeks ago when I was talking about it, like what better way to start the new year off, especially if you're struggling, than with this gift called sobriety. These 2 weeks were pretty awesome. It came back too fast, though. Love that little sabbatical. But, yeah, it's a new year, and, you know, God's going to do whatever he's going to do up here with me. And like James said, you know, I'm no different than anybody sitting out there. If you're new to this thing, I'm just a drunk trying to talk to you. I'm not an expert on the big book. I know the big book because I had great teachers, but I'm not an expert, and I don't pretend to be. Again, when Rachel asked me to do this, my first reaction was to run. Be like, I've never done this, you know what I mean? I've told my story lots of times, but being up here, you know, so something, I guess, touched her to ask me, so somebody very dear to me told me that I couldn't say no. Thanks, Allie, for that. And so here I am. You know, we woke up on New Year's, Allie and I, sober, and that was my 10th sober New Year, and for her, it was her 5th one, and, you know, we did a little reflecting that morning and how cool it was to wake up, remember the night before, remember how my car got home, didn't wake up with a strange woman next to me that I met the night before, didn't have cops looking for me. You know, and I think back, and that wasn't the case 10 years ago. You know, I was in the muckety muck, you know, and I stand before you today, a recovered alcoholic. I don't say that to brag. Doesn't mean I'm cured of this thing. I am recovered. And what does that mean? What is a recovered alcoholic? First, I have to know what an alcoholic is. And again, before I got here, I never wanted to be an alcoholic. I never wanted, when somebody called me an alcoholic, I took offense to that. Even though I was homeless, even though I, you know, didn't have a dime or a dollar to my name, you called me an alcoholic and those were fighting words. And, you know, I just didn't want to be one of you guys. So for 35 years, I drank and drug because that was the only normal life I knew. And we went to a meeting on Friday night, the Central Fact meeting, and the way they do their meeting is they have a speaker come up, and the speaker speaks, and then they call on somebody to share it, but the guy has to get up and come up to the microphone and share about whatever, you know, the experience that he just heard from the speaker. And so one of the guys got up there, he had like 25 years, and he was sharing about the holidays and how people go out, and people in his inner circle who had time and went out, like people with 15, 25 years, and I'm sitting there thinking like, man, I only got 10 years, and it's real for me, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not cured of this thing. So he shared that, and you know, we all know people that have relapsed before and stuff. So then he calls on this other guy, and this other guy gets up there. And this guy gets up, man, and he says, you know, my name is such and such, and I'm one of the guys he was talking about. And the guy had 5.5 years of sobriety, and not just, you know, abstinence or just going to meetings, but doing the deal. 5 years of doing the deal. And he shared this from the podium or from the stand or whatever. And I got goosebumps because, I mean, the vulnerability and the just walking through, not caring what it looked like to us or whatever. But he shared that. And so I'm here to tell the newcomer, man, like the book says, we have a daily reprieve from this thing. And just because I have 10 years today doesn't mean anything. If I start cutting corners, if I start compromising, I'm sliding backwards towards a drink. So back to this recovered alcoholic thing. You know, since I've been up here, I've been talking about, you know, the steps, obviously. And at a meeting I go to on Monday nights, we hammer home the first step. We hammer home of what this fatal malady that we're suffering from. Like, until I knew what was wrong with me, I wasn't going to fix it. And like I said, I thought I knew what an alcoholic was, but when I was told what an alcoholic was and I was told to be the doctor's opinion, I found out my truth. And my truth is, when I drink, I can't stop. I got evidence that says that fact, you know. Three DUIs approve it. Lots of geographical cures approve it. With all the best intentions, I go out saying I'm only going to have a six-pack. I'm only going to have a 20, or I'm only going to do da-da-da. And I mean that when I go out, you know. So you can look at your past and see if that fits for you. And when I do ingest that substance or whatever, I'm off to the races, right? I go out Friday night, and I come to Sunday morning. I don't wake up. I come to Sunday morning. And that was my truth for 20 years. But that's not the problem, you know. And I'm rehashing this for the new people that are here for the first time, for the people in treatment. Like, you know your truth. Like, you never, ever have to go out again. Like, this could be your last halfway house, your last treatment center, your last white chip. It can be. Relapse is not a requirement. You know, yes, keep coming back, of course. But it is not a requirement. I'm here to tell you that today. It's not a requirement. So anyway, that's not my problem. Because if I don't drink or drug, I can't get high or drunk. But I have this mental thing in my head that tells me that I don't have this thing. In light of all the evidence, in light of all the facts of my history of drinking and drugging, I could tell myself a lie that I don't have this thing. Like, this is my sick mind. I'm in jail after the third DUI. I'm in there for about 60 days, and I'm in there, and I'm like, I'm never going to do it again. Man, if I get out this time, I'm done. Seriously, I'm done. And they ROR'd me. And at the time, I didn't know what the hell that was, ROR. You know, I burned all my bridges in Georgia, and they called my name one morning and said, Keith, you're ROR'd. That means release on your own recognizance for all you good do-gooders and stuff. And nobody bailed me out. So I get out, and I'm like, yes. But what do I do, you know? I don't think about the last 60 days and my good intentions. I say, let's go to the bar. Let's go get, you know, stuff. And that's what I do. So there's step one, powerless, man. That's me. That's my story. I'm an alcoholic. I don't have to go to a speaker meeting. I don't have to hear anybody's story. I just got to mirror my past to this information. Got it. So then come to step two. You know, it says, and this program is all about the steps. And again, I'm not going to sit up here and bash the meeting makers make it thing, because that was what I used to do. I used to sit up here and judge that kind of recovery, and I would judge those kind of people. And I heard Peter share that, and he's like, "No, I'm no better than that person who's doing that." You know what I mean? If that's keeping them sober, great. I'm not to judge that, but that I couldn't just do that the way I used to drink and drug in my internal condition. So I was taught that I had to find this power greater than myself. I had to come to believe in a power that would restore me to sanity, and that means you're talking about God. And if you're not sure, or if you're not crystal clear about what this whole deal's about, it's all about God. Sorry to break the news to you. Sorry. You know, if you have a problem with that, you might as well leave now. Go out and try some more controlled drinking or crack smoking or whatever it is you do. But that's what it's about. I mean, and you don't have to believe right now, because I didn't believe right now. You know, I'd be lying if I said I believed about the God thing, because I didn't. All I know is that 35 years old, my life was in the toilet and I wanted to die. But I was too much of a coward to kill myself. And I didn't have to believe right now. I just believe that Joe believed, and I knew that he knew the answer, because I seen it working in his life. Like the book says, no human power can relieve me of this alcoholism. But when I got here, that was true, but I had to believe in something or somebody. And I believed in him and John. So we got problem one and two. We got that done, right? We got steps one and two done. It doesn't take a long time. I don't have to answer 100 questions, none of that crap. You know what I mean? I just got to come to those two conclusions. And then we get to step three. Just a little bit, so I'm just rehashing for now for you new people here. And step three says, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, that I understood him. What does that mean? Now, I'm of the mindset that when I get here, I know a lot of stuff, so I know everything. So I come into these rooms and I read those steps on the wall, I think I know what they mean. And that's not the case. You know, I had a friend of mine the other day, and I'm not going to... Anyway, he had a friend who had a sponsor who had her, you know, read the first 164 pages and highlight what you have a question about and then call me. That's not how I was taught, because I don't know anything about this book. So we sat down with this person just to give her an overview of the doctor's opinion. And, you know, we pointed out some things to this person, and she wouldn't have got what the book was talking about if that wasn't happening. So if you're new, man, you got to get with somebody. I had to get with somebody that was armed with the facts and could teach me this stuff. Because, yeah, I'm smart when I get here, but in this, I know nothing. Like, when I tell a newcomer to read the first 164 pages, any normal person, such as myself, would go to page one, right? That's what we do. If I'm new and you tell me, Keith, read the first 164, I'm going to page one. Page one in the big book is Bill's story, right? And I told you guys a couple weeks ago, me being as smart as I am, that when I got here, I cannot relate to it. Why would I got to read that story? Because he was an older guy from New York in 1920s. So I don't know. But if I do start at page one, I'm missing the nuts and bolts of this thing. Doctor's opinion, right? So in step three, you know, and somebody dear to me taught me this. Like, I always thought that the fourth step was the first action step in recovery. Like, it's the first action step. But really, it isn't. Because if this thing is all about God and I'm making my decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of this thing, that's an action. Like, that takes work. Like, that takes a lot of, that takes work. Like, I got to seriously sit there and think about that. But what am I turning my life and my thoughts over to? Again, I don't know anything about this. All I know is I'm dying when I get here. So I say, yes, I'm in. I can do this. And we do the third step prayer in my sponsor. And we did it. And the book tells me, next. Next, I launched out on a vigorous course of action. Again, people come in here and they're scared of the four-step inventory. The four-step inventory is not the boogeyman. It's not, it's not your life story. It's not an indictment of who you are. It's none of those things. What it actually is a blueprint of what's going to happen for the rest of the work. Right? But if I don't know that, and I'm listening to people who don't know, I'm in a treatment center with somebody, and they're like, no, don't do that four-step inventory. Don't snitch on yourself and shit, you know. You know. I'm new. He's got 12 days, I think. And I believe him because he's been here longer. He knows how the treatment center works. He knows what time the meals are. He knows what time the med line is. So he must know about this recovery thing. And he tells me that the four-step inventory, don't do that. It's not those things, man. And in this four-step inventory, because remember, when I get here, I don't know who I am. You know, I think I'm a good person. I think, you know, that my problem is drinking and drugs. If I just not stop drinking and drugging, my life will get better. And it does, right? It automatically does. Your life automatically gets better if you stop drinking and drugging. That's just a fact. And I guess I am an all right guy when I'm not drinking and drugging. I'm just a liar, cheat, and a thief. But I'm okay. So the four-step inventory, black and white, it's our resentments, our fears, our sexual harms, our harms of other people. And I get crystal clear with this thing, right? And if I have a good sponsor, he's teaching me how to do it. And I do this four-step inventory, like we covered last week or 2 weeks ago. After I've done the four-step inventory, I get to see for the first time in my life why my life is so screwed up. I get to see why when I show up on the scene, people run. Or my family shut the door on me. Or, you know, why I'm a scumbag. Like, Keith, you're a scumbag. No. Yes, you are. Look. But the book tells me, in the book you read again and again, that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you're convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you've already made a decision, which is step three, and an inventory of your grocery handicaps, which is step four, which we talked about 2 weeks ago, then right here, it says it. You have made a good beginning. So for all you people that have been around for a while and you've done a four-step and you think you're doing something, I mean, you have a little bit, but you ain't done jack. It's just the beginning. It's just the beginning of this journey. The book tells me, or one of our books tells me, that AA's 12 steps are a set of principles, spiritual in nature, that if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and allow the sufferer to become happy and usefully whole. Become happy and usefully whole. Now, I don't know about you, but when I got here, I was none of those things. This is what Keith was when he got here. This is on page 52 of the big book, right? So Bill spent a lot of time before he gets to how it works. If you read how it works at every meeting, pretty much. A lot of meetings, every meeting, how it works is read. Now, why didn't Bill put how it works on page one, right? Doctor's opinion, page one, how it works. He didn't do that because Bill knew Keith. He knew I was hard-headed, stubborn, egotistical. He knew all that. But this is me when I get here. And so now I'm coming to find out that maybe I have a little bit more problems than just drinking and drugging. So I had to ask myself, why shouldn't I apply to my human problems the same readiness to change my point of view? I mean, this is why I'm going to seek this God thing. This is why you have to seek God. Why I had to see. I'll speak for myself. Why I had to seek God. It's not about drinking anymore, right? But by the time I get to this step, I've been abstinent for about, hopefully, 60, 90 days. So it says, I was having trouble with my personal relationships. Marry this to your own past when you get here, or if you're just new to this program, right? It didn't say having trouble putting down the 20 rock or the Jack Daniels. He's talking about the inside. I was having trouble with my personal relationships, definitely. I couldn't control my emotional natures. That's for all you Boy Meets Girl on AA campus, right? Our emotional natures. Like, what is little Susie doing? Why isn't she calling me? I talked about this a couple weeks ago, you know. The book doesn't say don't get involved in a relationship. It doesn't say that in here, but it does. There's 80 years of experience. And you know, when I got here, I had angels in my life. I had angels, and like I was talking about, we look back over, you know, the course of our journey, and I'm looking back over my journey, and every now and then I reflect on my journey. And I reflect, like in step two, it tells me I came to believe in the power greater than myself to restore me to sanity. Over the past 10 years, I've come to believe that. Not even come to believe, I know that. So in my 10-year journey, from the beginning, I had this woman who wasn't an alcoholic or a drug addict, who at the time I didn't know. You know, I didn't know that God was using her to get me to where I am today. Like, she was a catalyst for this. Not an alcoholic, that's who God used. A Christian woman who worked at Applebee's, 50-year-old woman. But my sick head, like, she's doing what most good people do, like help your sick brother or whatever. But I see that as she's coming on to me. Like, she has it for me. Mind you, I had nothing. So my emotional natures, right? So we're talking about personal relationships, my emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. Does that live for anybody in here when you get here? Like, I know there's a lot of high bottom drunks in here, but that wasn't my truth. It also says we couldn't make a living. That was me. Like, I couldn't make a living, but here's my sick thinking. Like, I'm thinking the only job that I could have, the only job that is important to me is a restaurant job. Like, if I get a job, it has to be in a restaurant. It has to be waiting tables, because waiting tables for an alcoholic or drug addict is the perfect job. I don't know about you, but that's what I did for a long time. Like, I was able to get my money every day that I wanted to work. My man would meet me there. I didn't have to go anywhere for it, and I would have money every day. But that was my normal life. That seemed like the normal life for me. So when I got to Florida, what did I do? I got a job at Bennigan's, no longer there anymore. I got a job at Applebee's, no longer there anymore. Job at Longhorn's. Delivering pizzas, driving illegally. Anything in the restaurant business, but that was me. It says we had a feeling of uselessness. I was very useless when I got here. Like, I wanted to kill myself. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. Does that live for anybody in here? And the way I was feeling like that, I am not going to get better, or I'm not going to fix that by just coming to some meetings for an hour a day. It just wasn't going to happen. And Joe knew that. So he didn't care about my feelings, you know. What's your choice, Keith? What are you committed to having? I love that question. What are you committed to having? What's your legacy going to be? Like, things I would never ask myself out there, like, legacy? What? I think of legacy, I think of the Kennedys, the Rockefellers, Bill Gates, right? Like, what was important to me when I got here? Money, property, prestige, the fine girl on my arm, the car, all that crap. But this program is teaching me to have a new attitude, right? It's not promising me a better job. It's not promising me a better car. None of that stuff. You know, there's a principle behind each step in this program, right? Step one's principle is honesty. Step two's principle is hope. Step three's principle is faith. Step four's principle is courage. Step five's principle is integrity. But the principle behind step number seven, we're not there yet, but we're going to get there, is humility.
There's
all different kinds of descriptions about that word. But in the case of these steps, I believe that there's a little bit of humility in all the steps, right? And if I sit up and tell you I'm humble, then I'm not humble, right? That's just an oxymoron. But behind each step, I believe, is a little bit of humility. Let's look at it. Step one, me admitting that I'm powerless. That takes humility. I have to humble myself. Because when I get here, I'm an egomaniac. You know, I'm a former Marine and all this shit. I'm not admitting nothing about powerlessness. That takes a little bit of humility. And step two, come to believe in something I don't believe in, takes a little bit of humility. Step three, making that decision to turn my will and my life over to care of something I don't believe in, takes humility. So imagine, like, and this hit me like a couple days ago, this is divinely inspired, right? Because I don't know about you, but humility is never one of the characteristics somebody would describe me as. Step four, looking at myself for the first time. Really looking at myself. Like, when I come in here, I'm a victim. It's your fault why my life sucks. It just is. And I'm a victim when I get here. But it takes a little bit of humility for me to admit that and to look at myself honestly. Then we come to step five, right? Now, mind you, up until this point, nobody knows who Keith is. I'm the actor. Like I said a couple weeks ago, I can transform into any situation that needs to be. If I'm with the hip-hop crowd, I can be all hip, flipping cool. If I'm with the nerdy, scholarly type, I can do that too. But nobody knows me. When I got here, nobody knew Keith. And Lorna even said that one time. This woman, again, not an alcoholic, but this is how God works, right? God, one night I'm coming home and I'm wasted, man. This is like 2 months into the deal. And she sees it. I'm getting worse and worse and worse. And so I come up the walkway at 2 a.m, I'm trashed, like 2 sheets to win, and she's waiting for me. And I come inside, and, you know, she's just looking at me, and she says to me, Keith, who are you? Like, that question threw me. Like, what do you mean? I live with you. I work with you for 6 months. I'm Keith Neal. She's like, no. Who are you? Somebody out there is missing you. Who are you? And she left it at that. But that, as I look at that question now, nobody knew who I was. I didn't even know who I was. So we get to this fifth step inventory. So mind you now, I did a little bit of work, you know, but I'm still the same scumbag. I just know I'm a little bit better. Just know I'm a little bit better. I ain't done nothing yet to change. This program is all about changing and everything. I'm still the same person. I just know I'm better. So the book talks about this fifth step inventory. And this is chapter 6 of the big book. Into thinking. No, I'm just kidding. It's in the action. It says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, doesn't say quit drinking, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is, meaning I put a finger on it a little bit. You know, I'm coming to find out the first step inventory. That I'm the problem. I authored everything that happened in my life. Like I said before, you guys were the reason I was here. But now when I do a four-step inventory, I see that Keith Neal authored everything in his life. I'm no longer the victim. It says now these are about to be cast out. Right? Cast out. I need God's help with that. This requires action on our part. See, Bill's telling you, man. He's telling. There's no resting on my laurels. There's no sitting out hanging in there. There's no being dialed in on the radio frequency WSFN wanting something for nothing, right? I can't come in here and sit next to Mike Chase, and just because he's got recovery, I'm going to get this thing. No, I must do work. I must participate in my recovery. So it says, this action, there's action required on our part, which when completed will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Now, it's easy for me to admit to myself the exact nature. I can see that. But mind you now, when I got here, my mind, I didn't see things truthfully. I didn't see things clearly. And I can minimize details about that four-step inventory, right? And of course, God knows everything, so it's easy for me to give it to him because he knows everything. But he's not going to hold me accountable, right? So it tells me to get with another person. Now, back in the day when they wrote this book, they didn't, you know, there wasn't like sponsors and stuff. There was Bill and Bob at first, and then, you know, the guy out in wherever went to do this stuff. So he probably went to his priest or whatever, preacher. But for me, up until this point, my sponsor has taken me through the first five chapters. So I'm getting to know this guy pretty well. I get to see that he knows what he's talking about. I'm trusting him. I'm trusting him with my life so far, so why am I not going to trust him with my fifth step inventory, right? Because I want what that man has. So that's who I chose to do my fifth step with. It says, this brings us to the fifth suggestion of recovery. It says, this is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There's doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. So he's telling me right there that me looking at myself is insane. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We'd be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. Now listen to this. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. I can't think of a better reason why not to do this fifth step inventory. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep for themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Now, that goes against everything I was taught as far as telling people my business. Where I'm from, you just don't tell. That's called snitching. Especially on yourself. What is that? I did that and didn't even know I was doing it when I turned myself into Georgia. I did that. Right, so this man I'm doing my fifth step inventory with, again, it's somebody I trust. It's somebody who's going to hold me accountable. And we're going to use my fifth step inventory as the guide. Because we're trying to find out the exact nature of my wrongs, the exact natures of why I did what I did. Because, again, later on down the line, we're going to see that. For those wrongs I got on my fifth step inventory, I'm going to have to make amends for those things. So I went to my sponsor with this stuff, and the man held me accountable. Again, he was a guy that I could relate to. He was 35 like I was when he got in here. And we went through my list. Every one of them. And the cool thing about this fifth step inventory is because, you know, we were unique when we get here. I know I was. There were certain couple things I wasn't going to tell this man because, you know, too shameful. But we're a very diverse lot in here. And there's nothing that hasn't been done by somebody in AA, I don't think. Like, it's all been done. So I told this man everything, and he held me accountable. When I tried to say, yeah, but, he wasn't having it. You know, he was not having it. He was holding me to my highest. He was making sure that I understood what we're doing here, right? And why I had to take a look at this. Because doing things out the way I was doing things, in the four-step inventory, I saw the pattern. There's a pattern that develops. You can see the pattern. And once he saw the pattern, he stopped me. Like, he didn't let me go into a war story, none of that, because he knows. He knew me. I could ramble. And I'd get off the subject. So once we saw that pattern, he stopped me. Bam, let's move on to the next one. Right? So there's some wrongs you think you've done that can't be forgiven or that wasn't your fault. Like I talked about last week, man. I mean, there's some things that we've done or that were done to us that we didn't cause. Like we did not cause that to happen to us. But there's a payoff for me still running that gamut 35 years later. Who's paying the price for that? So, after we do this fifth step inventory, and like when Bill did his, he had a white light experience. That wasn't my truth, you know. That wasn't my truth. I didn't have a white light experience. I wasn't, you know. It just felt good for the first time in my life, somebody knew the real me. I was introduced to myself, which is pretty cool. So I got to go home, sit there for an hour, and just look at the first five proposals. Was anything left unturned? Did I not tell this man something? And there was something I didn't tell him. I didn't tell him about the three DUIs. I didn't tell him I had a warrant for my arrest in Georgia. Now, mind you, this is about 10 months into the deal. I'm at Solutions. I'm doing the deal. Joe knew that I had something was up because every time he'd ask me about the driving thing, I would, you know, put it off or whatever. So I might tell my sponsor this, and this one thing is it's eating me, man. It's owning me. Because every time I go out with friends, and I talked about this 2 weeks ago, every time I go out with friends, I got, there's lights, police, whatever. They can come out to the restaurant, come in for dinner, I think they're out for me, right? This thing is owning me. My past is still owning me. That one little piece that I wasn't going to tell him. So I finally told Joe. I didn't tell my sponsor. I told Joe. And he's like, all right, you know, it's not the worst thing ever. That you got a warrant, like you're a wanted criminal from Georgia, right? But for the first time that night, you know, I lay down and it was a peace. It was a peace that, like, man, the past can't hurt me no more. Like, literally the past that was dictating my future, that was running me for so long, could not hurt me for the first time. Somebody knew everything. That was amazing. The book talks about, you know, at a lot of meetings you read the nine-step promises. There's a nine-step promises at a lot of meetings. But the fifth-step promises, and there are fifth-step promises, it says we pocket our pride and we go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Now imagine this. Given what I just read on page 52 about the uselessness, all that crap, just 20 pages later, this is what happens after the fifth step inventory. Once we've taken this step with holding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. I don't know about you, but that wasn't my truth, right? We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Again, can be alone at perfect ease and peace. When I got here, I had to always be doing something. I always had to be the life of the party. But no, now I'm good. Imagine this. Our fears fall from us. Remember back in the four-step inventory, the four-step promise was our fear was going to leave us. We had a new creator. He's taking care of all that stuff. Here it is again. It says, we may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. That feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will come strongly. Imagine that. Imagine if you're struggling right now, after you do your four-step inventory, the drink problem would have disappeared. It says, we feel that we're on a broad highway walking hand-in-hand with the spirit of the universe. There's a deal right there, right? That's the deal. And that's in the fifth step inventory. Like, we're not even, I'm still the same scumbag I was. I'm still the same person. But that happens. I said it like a couple weeks ago after I had my little meltdown up here. And that I'm not an expert at this. Especially doing a step series, and I don't know anything. And James said it beautifully in the beginning. I care about the newcomer. I care about everybody in here, but really the newcomer. I'm speaking to the person that doesn't know. And if I could get sober, and again, I'm not taking credit for it, but if I can get sober by doing the work, anybody can get sober, right? It's a brand new year. You know, at this time of the year, people make a lot of New Year's resolutions, right? But what about the resolution for the drug addict or alcoholic? What's your resolution going to be this year? What is it going to look like this time next year for you? Is your new year going to be one of regret? I did it again. Another 30,000 down the drain. Loss of children. Loss of job. Geographical cure. Like, even though it's cold in Florida tonight, imagine the rest of the country. A lot of you guys are wearing parkas and shit. What's it going to look like next year? Like, ask yourself that. Like, literally. I mean, you have an opportunity to live two lifetimes in one life. Think about that statement for a minute. At my meeting on Wednesday night, we put up this thing on the overhead saying, am I ready to give up who I am? What does that mean? It's the person I am when I first came here, be it your first time in AA or be it your 20th time. This time is the deal. Are you ready to give up that person to become who you can be? It's going to take work. Yes, it is. But it's possible. A lot of people in here can attest to that. A lot of people in here can attest to that. I'm no better than, I'm no worse than. I'm just a little bit more surrendered than some. A little bit more surrendered. And that thing right there, a little bit more surrendered, has to be on a daily basis. I'm still a broken man. I'm still, you can ask Allie. I got issues, man. I got issues. But drinking ain't one of them. Right? And that's amazing. Given who I was, given the way I drink and drug, drinking is not one of them. I'm a free man that can go anywhere I want. Anywhere. You just got to ask yourself. And ask yourself on a daily basis, what are you committed to having? What is your commitment level in this deal? Last night I was with Joe and he had gave me this article that John had sent him that Wesley Parrish wrote back in 76. And it was pretty cool. The title of it is, What's Your Cup of Tea? Being recovery related. What's Your Cup of Tea? And it had three cups of tea up there. And it said, strong, medium, or weak. Strong being your program. Like being your commitment level to this deal. Are you doing it like they did it back in the 40s, all out? Is it medium, you know, half measuring it, sponsoring people in name only, going to meetings, Is it a have to, you know, or is it weak, not doing anything, right? Just coming here, just because you got to come here. Only you can answer that. What's your cup of tea? Well, my prayer for the newcomer, and I was praying with Allie before, if I touch one person tonight, then God's done his job. Success rate back in the 50s and the 40s was like 75%. Today it's like 3. Imagine that. 3 out of 100 in here are going to get sober. 3 out of 100 are going to get sober. Who here knows someone that has died as a drug result of drugs and alcohol? Raise your hand. Look. Not trying to scare anybody because, you know, that's another thing about us. We're not scared of anything. We're not. Fear is not going to sober you up. Mommy and daddy's not going to sober you up. Only being done is going to sober you up. So my prayer is, man, that the percentage next year will be, you know, higher than it is today. And I'm blessed for you guys to ask me to be up here. I'm blessed for you guys to show up week in, week out. And God bless.